is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to the weekly news magazine, Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. Well, up front in the program here, we will talk about China, Wuhan, and really a news story that you haven't heard anything about, a high-level defection in the Chinese, in fact, probably the highest in history. We're going to bring that story to you, which is a new story that nobody is talking about yet, but you will be hearing more about this. Also, what about cultural shock? I've asked Debbie D'Souza to join us on the program today, and you know, she is got so much vital inside baseball information when it comes to socialism in America, because her birth country, Venezuela, went through a lot of the signs that we're experiencing here now in America. Debbie D'Souza will join us a little bit later in the program, and we'll talk about the cultural shock we're going through right now in America here. But up front here in the broadcast, we've got a very special program to bring to you, and that is, and you've heard of this woman, I am sure, in the news. Dr. Li Mengyang is here, and Dr. Li Mengyang is a Chinese virologist. She's the whistleblower from Hong Kong who left her family, associates, her life, left it all to arrive here in America. And this is a major story, what Dr. Li Mengyang has uncovered and what she talks about in blowing the whistle on China. I sat down with her for an extraordinary two-hour program on The Voice of a Nation, which will air on Monday. I'll tell you more about that on the flip side. But right now, I want you to hear some very compelling dialogue from Dr. Li Mengyang. When you discovered this in the lab, when you discovered what you're speaking about right now, what was your reaction to yourself? What did you, at that moment when it was very clear to you, and I mean, I can see you as a scientist, at the moment doing this, what comes to your mind right then? What do you say to yourself?
Oh, actually, I was shaking, to be honest. From the 16th January night in Hong Kong, when I read this article about the backbone of this virus, which was published on early 2018 by military, I realized that this is the backbone, and I need to double confirm it through different ways. That's why the next morning I went to the lab and using the different, like the comparison or other way to confirm that this is based on the virus, and after modification becomes SARS-CoV-2. It spent me the whole morning. I compare the things from the whole virus to different segments of the virus. And finally, I'm sure that this virus disobeys the nature evolution theory. And all together with the intelligence and expertise I know and how I know China government, I'm sure this is the thing come out from military and other labs, which finally becomes this kind of unrestricted bioweapon. I take like half an hour to think about the next step because I cannot trust the WHO expert. And I know I found it. China government will try their best if they know I want to deliver it out. Yes, it was terrible at that time, but I also know this virus, it already come out. It's already covered up by China and lead to the outbreak in Wuhan. I remember my friend, the doctor's voice, a shaking voice, and she's so sad that the government want to silence the doctor to cover up the outbreak, but they are scared of the virus.
Dr. Yan, I asked the most difficult question I want to ask you, and I think it's the most important one. We already know you've stated about this, the biological weapon, the Chinese military, the involvement, the origins of this and what the intentions were. Now, there are still a lot of officials and a lot of people that are suggesting that, okay, that could still be true, but it was an accident. China didn't mean any harm. And I want to ask you right out, because I think it's important to understand, in your heart, in your soul, how do you feel about that? Do you feel that this was purely an accident of some sorts? Or was there another goal that China had to unleash this on? Was it unleashed on the world in a more accidental way, or is this an intent to do harm, please?
Okay, actually, this is a little bit complicated, but for me, this logic is quite clear because I have evidence and also have knowledge about China government. So let's go back to say China government has developed the strategy about the novel bioweapon, which I define as unrestricted bioweapon, back to at least 5 years ago. That's why in 2015, the bioweapon expert, China General De Zhongxu, has written the bioweapon textbook. In that book, they actually first define this kind of bioweapon, which should be looks like from nature. And when people recognize it's not from nature, then they can deny or use lies, use misinformation to waste people's time and confuse them. And also, this doesn't need to be high death rate, but because it's more hidden, so this virus can lead to the large damage in enemy's area, including the economic breakdown and social disorder, and finally ruin their civilization. And to make this happen, they want to optimize the bioweapon.
What should we be worried about in the future, knowing China, knowing their history, knowing the position they have with bioweapons? You know, this was a virus pandemic, SARS-CoV-2, that took down the world. There's still a lot of questions. There will be a lot of questions moving forward. We may never know some things. We know a lot more today because of you, for sure. But here's what I ask you. How much danger is the world in with these careless attempts and what China is doing, the evil that they have put out onto the world? What kind of danger are we on in, and what else lies in these laboratories they have in China, please?
Okay, you have asked a very good question. Actually, we see now the world is messed up, but that is based on, right back to the root of all these things. It is because China government tried to make such big problem and then destroy your society, destroy your democracy, destroy your belief, and then later they can take advantage. They know when they trigger the things out by using the unrestricted bioweapon like COVID-19, they can later get what they want, because later the downstream things involve people's greedy, involve the people's misinformation from different campaigns try to get advantage from the pandemic, and also involve many other factors. Try to, you know, reconstruct all these things takes time, but we don't have much time left. This virus, only the SARS-CoV-2, is already highly transmissible, and only after 1 year we see our world become totally destroyed. And we cannot give China government more time to make them finish their goals. So the first thing, if you want your life go back to normal, you have to push your government, push the policymaker, push the legislation to hold China Communist Party accountable, not only by asking them to pay the money, but also just stop this kind of behavior from the root, not allow China military to conduct those labs. There are numerous labs under their control or infiltrated by them, influenced by them. And not allow this kind of evil ideology exist in the world or harm people. You have to control it from the root. Then you can try to reorganize things in your country. And then gradually, we had the hope to go back to the normal life as before.
The full conversation I had with Dr. Li Mengyang is, I think, fairly incredible. There was no question off limits, and she was so gracious to answer everything, and she did it with such spirit and accuracy in trying to bring the truth to the world. That entire broadcast, that I'm so pleased that she really dedicated all that time, because this is a kind of a story that takes that level of time to be able to get into all of the pieces and the moving parts of this massive major story that has really swallowed our world whole. Tune in Monday, The Voice of a Nation, 5 p.m., 5 to 7. And then there's an encore at 10 p.m. and listen to that broadcast. And then we'll eventually get it to podcast as well for everybody to hear. But I think it's important the world hear from her in the way that we discussed the factors. She'll speak about, as you heard, some of the things she just spoke about, but about Fauci, she's very outspoken about him, as you know. She's very outspoken about the CCP, what they're up to, very outspoken about the Chinese government and what she hopes to accomplish. So that all happened on Monday on The Voice of the Nation. Up next now, I want to bring Ilana Friedman on. And this is a big story again that we're going to talk about, not only Wuhan and what developed there, but I want to take a little further now and talk about this high-level defection that has happened here in China here. Deng Jingwei is the highest-ranking official to defect from China in that country's history, and he finds himself here in the United States. There's a lot of pieces to this we'll discuss right next here. But let me bring on Ilana now. And Ilana's a veteran intelligence analyst, an advisor in intelligence that led counterterrorism solutions, trained in Israel. And we're very happy to have her here on Viewpoint and at America Out Loud. Ilana, this story, when you and I first started talking about it, fits the puzzle here pretty well that we happen to be talking with as well on the program here, Dr. Li Mengyang. And it's interesting to tell people we're starting to see more of these defections happen out of China. This particular one here comes at an interesting time. But tell us more about, he didn't just go to the FBI, the CIA, DOJ, whatever. He went to a different branch here, if you will, of intelligence. Tell us who this man is and who he's talking to now in our country.
Yeah, this man is very interesting. Because he is, or he was, before he defected from China, he was a very high-level vice minister of state security and the head of counterintelligence for the whole Chinese Ministry of State Security. He was responsible for counterintelligence activities throughout China. And he was, as I said, a vice minister. So he was very high up. Now he's in the United States and he is talking. And he is talking to the United States Defense Intelligence Agency, the DIA. You would expect that he might be talking to the CIA or someone else, but he came over here. He defected from Hong Kong and came over to the United States through the United Kingdom. He went there first because he didn't trust the CIA or the FBI. And he wanted to connect with an agency that he was able to trust and feel that he could give information to without any kind of other interfering.
He was afraid he was going to be compromised, obviously, right? With the CIA. So he picked this group. Yeah, it's interesting how he came through the UK as well, Ilana. What are the kinds of things, how does it relate to some of the stuff we're talking about now in regards to Wuhan and the virology lab and all of that and Fauci? And what are some of the things that you've heard through your intelligence sources that that he's talking about with our officials?
A lot of intelligence about the virus and its source. He is also downloading, if you will, military intelligence that has been formally classified in China until now, names of U.S. citizens who provide intelligence to China, names of Chinese spies who are working in the United States or attending United States University. And by the way, they have just I think they've arrested or deported Chinese students who were in the United States at universities and here for the purpose of capturing intelligence to take back to China. That has been an industry in this country for many years, and they are trying to put a stop to it. In addition to that, he's talking about financial records that show American businessmen and public officials who have received money from the Chinese government, and that includes members of Congress and right up to the White House and Biden Incorporated. And then he's also reportedly divulging details of meetings with American government officials, wittingly or otherwise, with Chinese spies and members of the Russia's SVR. And then he is giving information, of course, about how Chinese government, CCP, gained access to a CIA communication system, which led to the death of dozens of Chinese people who were working with the CIA.
Do you think this will hit the main news cycle at some point? Because nobody really is talking about or has this information yet, or at least they don't have it out there. Do you expect this to get into the mainstream news cycle or what?
You know, the news cycle is not very cooperative in getting real news out there.
It's incredibly fascinating, this story here. And again, his name is Dong Jingwei, the highest ranking official to defect from China. This is a gold mine, a treasure trove, if you will, of information is what we're looking at here. I mean, this guy, again, you take a look at the position he had here to be at the head of counterintelligence. So there's a lot more that meets the eye here. And I like what we're seeing here. Obviously, we're seeing more of these defections happening from China. That kind of tells you a lot of people are finally getting a conscience there and are speaking up loud and clear. And people that know what's happening is wrong. China, you know, as we've been talking about right along here on America Out Loud, is they are up to no good. Now, up next here, we're going to talk to Debbie D'Souza and this cultural shock that's happening in our country. A lot of these cultural programs that are turning people against people, race against race, person against person. And a lot of this is really exactly the recipe on how they unleashed socialism onto Venezuela, which at one time was one of the most successful countries in that part of the world. And now it is a third world, you know what. Debbie D'Souza, is her birth country. She'll talk about all that in just ahead here. We'll take a pause, my friends, and we'll be back with more Viewpoints this Sunday.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Because of COVID-19, the average American worries about their immune health 4 times a day. That's 112 times per year. To minimize the worries, leading nutritional supplement company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost, an immune supplement that contains 15 full doses of science-backed nutrients like vitamin C, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea, all in a one-a-day pill-free gel pack. It tastes great, is convenient on the go, and it's more natural too, without chemical binders, fillers, and coatings. Supporting a strong and resilient immune system can be simple. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Immune Super Boost. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
AmericaOutLoud.com is the alternative from the agenda-driven globalist. Here, we take on the challenges of our generation so that we can preserve future generations. On-demand podcast or real-time talk radio with our streaming apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
In 2008, the amount of concentrated time people could spend on a task without becoming distracted was 12 seconds. 5 years later, it was only 8 seconds, 1 second less than a goldfish. If you find yourself always distracted or having trouble recalling information, you're likely to fall behind in the demanding, fast-paced 21st century. In other words, brain performance is more critical now than ever. Boost your brain power with Healthy Cells Focus Plus Recall. Science-backed nootropics to sharpen focus, concentrate longer, enhance recall, improve mental speed, learn rapidly, and be more alert. It's a pill-free brain supplement made with maximum absorption technology, designed to feed our brains at the cellular level. Take it for a test drive. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Focus Plus Recall. That's HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Many believe this COVID crisis, which really produced a pathway, if you will, for government to control the narrative, force the lockdowns, the mask wearing, social distance. But the big problem is a lot of people have not just, you know, fallen for it, but they are continuing that, that parade. And the challenge with that is that, you know, if you ever want to look back and say, well, what would it take to get most of the American people to lock down or pay attention or do what they are supposed to do? If this was a lesson or a test drill or a what do they call it, emergency broadcast system alarm, right, for socialism, well, this was probably perfect right now. If they tested it, they kind of know what happens. And that's scary. It's very, very scary, actually. The election has empowered a lot of the crazy people, basically, is what I'm saying. And they've come out, and a lot of the power seekers as well. All of this becomes a recipe to this road to socialism that's been talked about. You know, at one point, it was just a Bernie Sanders funny laughing point with the nighttime comics, if you will. But it's no longer that. It's a big deal. Now you're seeing the push for statehood. You're seeing this pack in the court business. And you're seeing the build of big government and the stimulus that is happening. So it's a big deal here. I'd like to talk about that next and a whole lot more with Debbie D'Souza joins us. Now, Debbie, her birth country was Venezuela, so she's seen this all firsthand as a, well, she was young at the time there, but her family and her roots come from there. So she speaks about this passionately, very clearly. Debbie is an American conservative activist, columnist, a filmmaker, producer of the Dinesh D'Souza podcast. Debbie, it is awesome to have you on Viewpoint this Sunday.
Well, Malcolm, as always, thank you for having me on. I think you're just one of the few people out there that get this and get the threat of this. And you so eloquently always put it in the right perspective. And yes, I mean, things could not be worse, I think, in our country. It seems like when I talk to you, I'm like, well, you know, this is what the road led to in Venezuela, and this is where we're going. Right. But it does, sometimes they do pull out these cards where, you know, I call it the rigging card in order to do this, because even in Venezuela, they had to rig the system in order to bring Venezuela to collapse. They had to rig the system in order to bring socialism. People were not on board.
It's happening right before our eyes. And that's the dangerous part of this, is we don't always realize it's happening because it is the frog in the pot theory, right? And then it becomes, oh, wow, I mean, we're in trouble here. So let me say this here. You and I talked earlier in the year. We did a fantastic program for the Voice of a Nation, Knowing the Signs of Socialism. And we talked about it at length, and yes, how real is the danger that America is turning socialist? And you put it out there very compellingly. What's happened since then? Have you changed your mind at all, or is that fast track still in play? And what do you think?
Oh, my goodness. So I think the last time we spoke, the Democrats hadn't pushed for this court packing scheme yet.
Yeah.
Correct?
That's right. That's right. Because it was early in the year. It was around February, and that hadn't happened yet.
Right. That hadn't happened. Of course, the push for the statehood, DC statehood, had not happened yet. Yeah. So absolutely, all of these things they just kind of bring us closer to closing that gap of, okay, this is Venezuela, this is America. This is exactly what happened in Venezuela. And I can go in depth if you like.
Well, I want to do that. And, you know, I'm glad you point out what you did, because that's perfect. When you and I spoke, you're right. I forgot about that, but none of these things had happened yet. And so that's the answer to that thing. Because we were saying, what if, Debbie, remember, you know, like, right. Well, we don't know if they'll really do that. Well, right. You know, but the one thing I've noticed about the extreme left is they're right now, they're seizing power, which really plays it to Venezuela. But let's do this. I want to first say there was a tweet, and this will help put this into perspective that I'd like you to opine on. There was a tweet from Representative Ilhan Omar, which you retweeted and commented on. But let me read her tweet. That was back in April 30th, by the way. And it was this: in the richest country in the world, no one should live in poverty, period. Eradicating poverty starts with implementing Medicare for all, $15 minimum wage, Social Security expansion, homes for all. I guess that's free houses too. I don't know. Federal jobs guarantee. So that was the bulleted list that Representative Omar had put in there. And you replied and retweeted and said, well, that's what Hugo Chavez said 20 years ago. And now Venezuela is in ruins. The ruling elite die really rich and the rest just eat cake or, in some cases, dogs. Wow. And, you know, I have a friend that was from Venezuela who commented on that, and that got my attention, the tweet you put out there. Expand on that.
Right. So, you know, all of these goodies, I call them, that the leftist government loves to put out there, like, we're going to take care of you. We're going to give you free health care. We're going to give you free housing. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. School for everybody, free college, all of these things. First of all, nothing is free, as we all know. And even Ilhan Omar knows this, right? So she has to take it away from somebody. Somebody has to do this. And so in Venezuela, it took Hugo Chavez 20 years to do this. And he started out saying the exact same rhetoric. If Ilhan Omar wasn't in the photo and I translated it into Spanish and put Hugo Chavez's photo on there, that's exactly what he said 20 years ago. So, you know, fast forward to now and look at Venezuela. My family, you know, constantly begging for money, constantly asking, hey, do you know where I can find this medicine or that medicine? Things like that. It is so heartbreaking because these people had money. They were upper middle class. And when I said, you know, let them eat cake, I meant it. My family, thankfully, has not resorted to the pet eating phenomenon, but some have. And so, you know, they go to the grocery store. And earlier you said about the frog boiling. Mm-hmm. When my aunt used to go to the grocery store, she couldn't find any food at one. So she would find something at one grocery store, then she'd go to another, then she'd go to another. And finally, she'd have a few things, right? So she wasn't super bothered by that because she was happy, first of all, that she found something, right? So that kind of kept her a little happy. But as time went on and she stopped finding things at all, she began to realize that she was being boiled, you know, she was being boiled alive, so to speak. She couldn't live like that. So, socialism is the enemy of just the middle class person. Yeah. You cannot expect to demonize and steal the fruits of someone's labor and for everybody to just live happy, you know, and sing kumbaya. I mean, how does that work? It doesn't.
Yeah.
And it didn't in Venezuela.
I've been pointing out to folks in recent days and weeks, Debbie, that the recipe for socialism is really the 1% and the rest of us. It really is the elites, the people. And, you know, when you take a look, in fact, I pointed this out on my daily program. When you take a look at, you know, the Bernie Sanders, the AOCs, even the Dianne Feinsteins, the Nancy Pelosi's, the Chuck Schumer's. So all these people have become very wealthy, not on their salaries, obviously, their government salaries, but they become very wealthy. They live in amazing homes, gated, beautiful, gorgeous homes with lots of ice creams in the refrigerator and so on and so forth. You know, it's a multifaceted lifestyle, which is terrific if you go out and earn it. I think everybody is entitled to that. But the point is, that's what America offers, in fact, is an opportunity to achieve, not a guarantee and not a free handout from a government. That's not at all what this experiment was about. But with all of that, those are what I call the elites. Those are at the top of the food chain. Those are that 1% we really talk about. And then there's the rest of us. Well, that is the recipe for socialism. So what's really ironic is these power brokers, these political elite operatives, they use the recipe of they want to do everything for everybody, which is what, as you said, Chavez did back in Venezuela. I'm going to give you all of this, this, and this. And yet it's all a political guise and it's trickery. And but the problem is, Debbie, a lot of these people fall for it. I mean, they really, really fall for it. And the only thing I can do is keep pointing out what is not so obvious to people. Isn't that the problem?
Yeah, well, the first time they fell for it, they did vote overwhelmingly for Hugo Chavez because he lied to them. He said he was. But you see, the interesting thing with Hugo Chavez is that he went in saying he wasn't a socialist and he wasn't going to nationalize industry. So that meant that the even people that, like my grandparents, for example, who were landowners and they were retired landowners, they thought, you know, this guy seems like really nice. He seems like a good guy. He doesn't seem like he's, you know, corrupt, because that was the other thing. He ran as an anti-corruption candidate. So he really laid it out there and people believed his lies and they believed that he wasn't a socialist. So my grandparents had no idea that they were going to lose their land to this man.
Wow.
If they had, they would have never voted for him in the first place. So when people began to see after he won this election, they began to see what he was doing, and he was doing it not super fast, but fast enough. They began to collect signatures and try to recall him and try to, they actually did a referendum election in 2004, as I told you back when I spoke to you last.
Right.
And that election was rigged. So when Hugo Chavez won, in 2004, he won that referendum, so he stayed in power. That's when he began his court packing scheme. That was kind of the beginning of the end, because he needed the court to destroy the constitution of Venezuela, which was a republic.
Yeah. And we did talk about that. Yeah. I guess the goal was he wanted to add, what, 12 new justices, I think, to the court, was it?
Yeah. Yeah. I believe he added 12 justices. He went from 20 to 32 members.
Wow.
They were all loyalists to him. Mm-hmm. And so, so this happened early on. They essentially made they stripped the country's congressional power, mm-hmm. Allowing the judges to pretty much systematically assume legislative duties. And so they are the ones that made the laws. They're the ones that pretty much destroyed the Constitution. And then, of course, in 2015, Chavez's handpicked successor, after he passed away, Nicolas Maduro, got a blow in the election process, because, you know, the people started seeing these people for what they were. And so the opposition won a majority of congressional seats in that 2015 election.
Okay.
However, during the lame duck session, the pro-Maduro members of Congress rammed through 13 new Supreme Court justices.
Mm.
And he had already put in more than a dozen just the year before. So, as I've told you, this devastated Venezuela's constitutional republic.
Mm-hmm.
And election rigging, which led to court rigging, began the process of destruction in Venezuela.
Yeah, because a lot of people don't realize it was very much a model that was very similar to ours, with the presidency, legislative branch, Supreme Court, that sort of thing.
Yes.
And like, how many justices do they have now? What is it, like 930 or something? I don't know. What's the number? Do you have any idea?
Oh, my goodness. I don't know. I think it might be in the 50s, but I'm not sure.
Wow. Incredible. Well, they keep adding and adding to it, as you say. Yeah. Now, here's the thing. You know, there's been a lot of controversy here about that. In fact, there's a push to put an amendment, to create an amendment. There are some Republicans that are trying to create this amendment, which is difficult to add this to get this approved here, but they want to be able to do that to make it mandatory that that 9 is the number here and that it can't be expanded from one party to the next. But I don't know what the chance that has when Biden took over. One of the things he did was put this whole move in there to study the court. I mean, the telltale signs were all there, what they wanted to do. And what they do is they hire it with this committee of people that are loyal again. It's the same sort of program that Chavez did back then that Biden was trying here. And of course, Biden, who is not really Biden, it's the people behind Biden. I mean, he's like your unsuspecting grandfather or uncle down the boulevard. You really don't expect him to be. But that's kind of the worst thing about somebody like Biden, don't you think, Debbie?
Right. So he's controlled. He's definitely, I actually think Obama is in charge. Wow. I do think he's
a lot of people do.
He's in DC. And I think a lot of his policies are like, you know, I think Obama made a list of all the things he didn't get to do. And now he's getting to do them through Biden.
And he uses the guy who he can boss around because the guy doesn't even know what really the score is of the game. And I mean, that's sad, but you're right. He's doing that. Right. And, you know, he's just down the road there, as you say, which might be part of the reason they are. It's not easy to get records from this White House. They're very non-transparent. Usually there's a log that tells you who's in and out of the White House, who the calls are coming from. But you can't even get that from these people, Debbie.
Oh, no. Oh, no. And also, you know, the militarization of D.C. and of the White House and of you know, the Capitol,
right. That
too is very Hugo Chavez-esque. It's very Venezuelan to do that.
Yeah.
And not to mention, it's also very, very Venezuelan to demonize a group of people. Now, I'm not condoning anything that happened on January 6th, but I do know that it was not what they say.
Right.
And, but in Venezuela, they did the exact same thing to patriots who were simply, they went to Maduro to, you know, to demand that they respect the Constitution. In fact, I sent you a photograph of a woman with a cap, you know, Venezuelan cap on, very patriotic. And she has a poster with the Venezuelan Constitution and a hand. And it says, respeten la constitución, which means respect the constitution. Yeah. So these patriots went to the Venezuelan capital to pretty much protest. Mm-hmm. And the exact same thing happened to them.
Debbie, the similarities are, you can't wrap your mind around it, are so alarming that if people just listen to what we're talking about right now or pay attention, they'll get a lot out of this. But all right, I want to talk about this Adams state. So let me tell folks, in case, I think a lot of people may not know this. There was a lot of talk about Adams, Washington, D.C., and even Puerto Rico, they've talked about extensively, which has been talked about for many years, Adams, that which would give 4 more Senate seats to the far left who are pushing this agenda, clearly, who've taken over the Democrat Party. And that's really what's happening here. It's a Marxist move, if there ever was one. Well, the House approved this. 216-208, and this was approved and now is supposed to be headed somewhere. We don't think it's going to be an easy fix for the Senate, but again, with the filibuster still, and hopefully we get a couple of these Democrat senators like Manchin to hold steadfast and not give in. But if they don't, we're in a heap of trouble. Listen, there's something about this DC. Right now, they're pushing that. The left wing of the party and Pelosi, they voted, they got that. I want to educate folks. There's a reason why Washington, D.C. should never be a state. There's a reason why our frame is positioned at Debbie in the way that they did. Let me play. This is a very interesting audio clip from Paul Engel, who hosts the Constitution Study on our network, and he is brilliant when it comes to the Constitution. I'll tell you more about that, but I want to play this clip, Debbie, and I want you to opine on it because he has some very interesting things to say here. Everybody needs to hear. Listen in, please.
Malcolm, the first question we should ask is, why was Washington, D.C. created separate from a state? Now, according to Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 of the Constitution, Congress has the power, quote, to exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over such district not exceeding 10 miles square, as may by secession of particular states and acceptance of Congress become the seat of the government of the United States. So the whole idea was whatever area, whatever territory would become the seat of the government of the United States, it would be seceded from the states. It would be separate from the states. Now, why? Well, the most obvious reason is simple politics. Imagine, as it was when our nation first started, the capital was in New York City or in Philadelphia. In other words, imagine the seat of the federal government being subject to the laws of the state of New York or the state of Pennsylvania. That would give that state a tremendous amount of influence over the federal government. They would be bound by the laws of the state while meeting in the seat of government. So the seat of government was always meant to be separate from any other state. The other is recognizing that since it is the seat of the United States, the Union of States, it must be under the direct legislative control of Congress and only Congress. Should Washington, D.C. become a state, you would then have a state legislature, which would have legislative control over the seat of the federal government, a direct violation of the Constitution of the United States. We wouldn't turn, you know, Fort Bragg or Camp Lejeune or Camp Pendleton into their own state because they're federal territories. Washington, D.C. is a federal territory. The citizens of Washington, D.C. have been given electors to choose the president, but they do not have representation in Congress, not voting representation in Congress, because they are not parties to the union called the United States of America. So what the House of Representatives is trying to do is a direct violation of the Constitution of the United States, therefore their oath of office to support the Constitution of the United States. Not that I'm terribly surprised, but should Washington, D.C. be, quote-unquote, made a state, it would be an illegitimate state because it will have been illegally created in direct violation to Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 of the Constitution of the United States.
That is one of the best explanations I've heard about this statehood business that puts it out there from a constitutional expert. And by the way, Paul Engel, the Constitution study, he is phenomenal. If you really want to learn about the Constitution and know, he's on weekdays, 4 p.m. Eastern Time. You can hear him on America Out Loud Talk Radio. He's impeccable when it comes to constitutional matters like this. So you want to tune in and you'll learn, I promise you, you'll learn a ton from Paul there on the Constitution study. Debbie, there's so much he says in that 2-minute clip there, but you see, he's spelling out the reasons why this should never happen and why you can't make this just part of a state. It makes sense that the framers had this vision that was federally off limits for any state to grab onto, doesn't it?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And you're right. It was a great explanation because it would be such a conflict of interest that it would be a really interesting phenomenon to then have to elect state legislature. And then like right there next to them is our U.S. legislature. I mean, it's pretty baffling. But, you know, it's not surprising that the Democrats want to do this. Why? Because they do want to have more Senate seats. And they know that DC is extremely left-wing. They know Puerto Rico is extremely left-wing. They obviously wouldn't advocate for a state, for example, if Puerto Rico was completely full of right-wingers, they would never advocate to add it as a state. So they only do it because of the power grab. That is their That's the in their DNA. That's the MO of the left. It is the party of slavery, the KKK, segregation. It is that party for sure. And, you know, they rigged elections back with, you know, Tammany Hall and all of those things. So these people are kind of back to their roots, to be honest. But yes, Marxism is rooted on division and you know, anarchy and trying to overthrow an existing government. So for the left, and now that, you know, they're married to the Marxist movement of the left, You know, I know a lot of Democrats that are still, they may not act like they're like Ilhan Omar, but they're okay with it because they, why haven't they left the party? You know, so I do think that the only way that the left and the Democrats are going to essentially destroy America, just like Hugo Chavez and Maduro destroyed Venezuela, is by changing everything, fundamentally just changing America. And that begins with the classroom. They have to go there, obviously. So all of this critical race theory stuff, you know, happening now, they have to do that because these kids have to grow up hating America in order for this to culminate and happen. You know, I have a really good friend who is extremely wealthy. Her husband is a general in the regime, and they don't suffer at all. She's always posting photos of herself with her fur coat and their yacht and this and that. And so there are two societies in Venezuela, the liberal elite society that has everything and the people that don't, and the people that resisted. So the patriots, the conservative patriots that resisted. And you know, I look at America and I'm just so afraid that we're going to be living that reality in about 20 years.
That is one of the best explanations that I've heard, the way you just put it out there. It really documents what I say all the time, Debbie, about those elites and the rest of us. You know, and you're so right to point out, Debbie, I applaud you with the fact that this was really the roots of the Democrat Party all along. And it's a good lesson that you put out there as well when you bring it back to the KKK and the origins of slavery and where this all came from, the fact that they have always wanted to hold people back. I guess the guise is that they've sort of been, they're out of the closet now with being as hostile as they are. But for all those years, you sort of thought it was, back to JFK's party, it was supposed to be just a political party in America. And I think you're right. Those roots are now coming out and they seem to have the daggers out for America now. And I think a lot of that is because Trump scared the hell out of them. And bringing this back to a constitutional country,
absolutely, yeah. Absolutely, and just to and to your point with JFK, JFK was super anti-communist.
That's right,
and that wing is gone. So JFK essentially was the one that brought the Democrat Party to be anti-communist. But
he'd be a conservative today, everybody says.
He would be anti-communist for sure. I mean, he was.
Can you imagine these people, the JFKs? I mean, if they're rolling around in their graves looking at what's happening here. Well, let's do this. Our last few minutes, I want to do a little round robin with you because I love this sort of thing. And you are a great social media Twitterer. you'll put it out there. And I love, some of you are so good at this because you have that brand of fun and sarcasm a little bit. It's funny how you can make a point quickly. I want to come through a series of these. Let's do a quick round robin. So really end of April, beginning of May, right through the end of May, these are tweets. You put one out. I have trouble sleeping sometimes. Is there anything on tonight that will knock me right out? Hashtag Biden address. Tell us about that one.
Well, you know, women my age have trouble sleeping. We have a bad case of insomnia. And so I really thought, you know, I really want to watch something that'll put me to sleep. And boom, there it was. And
the Biden address, right? I love it.
And he did.
Oh,
and
my golly. I chuckled so much on that one. But let's move on. The one after that, there was a tweet from a guy, Ben. I'll only use first names here, but Ben. And it said, he said, what would Coca-Cola need to do for you to drink Coke again? A simple enough question. And you wrote, hashtag no Coke ever. Boy, Coke really stepped into it, didn't they, here?
Well, you know, they did. But the interesting thing about Coke and Coca-Cola and any of those kind of sodas is, of course, they're so bad for you. So I had actually not, I haven't had Coke in many, many years because of that, for the health reasons. And so now that they're getting into the woke cancel culture phenomenon, I'm like, you know, I've already, you know, canceled them. I canceled them a long time ago, but I think everybody else should get on board. And this is a reason why. Don't just do it because they're left wing and because of the woke culture or whatever, right. Do it for your health.
Well, so, listen, I remember growing up as a boy, they would take Coke. The whole saying is, I don't know if you ever heard this, Debbie, they would take Coke and they said it would take the rust off of your bumper in the car. You heard that before?
Yes. And and clean your toilet bowl.
Wow.
And someone even told me that it cleans blood. Like from the sidewalk, I was like, okay.
So when somebody says to you today, do you want a Coke? That might be an insult, right? They might be wanting to kill you or something, right?
I would think so. I'm not having it.
I don't drink it either. I don't drink the stuff. It. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Another one you put out on May 11th, it was this. The sad thing is, at Liz Cheney thinks the Democrats actually like her. Well, the reality is she's going to become a very lonely lady in politics. Well, what do you mean by that one?
Yeah, well, you know, she thinks that she's actually doing a favor, right? And so, you know, because all these like news anchors and you know, the Democrats, Nancy Pelosi, oh, she is the real deal, blah, blah, blah. Actually, no, they love the fact that there's infighting. They love that. Mm-hmm. And the only reason that they even gave her 5 minutes of fame is to demonize the rest of us. So they used her and they spit her right back out.
Right.
And she's not going to be liked by anybody. She's certainly not liked by them. And she's betrayed the rest of us. So I think she's going to be a very lonely lady.
Yeah, and that's well said. You had a tweet out mid-May. There was a guy who put a tweet out. His name was Jack. Again, the Wuhan lab even looks like Umbrella Corporation. And you said the deadliest lab in the world. And that's a fact. At Jack, meaning Jack from Twitter. And that caught my attention because we've talked about that quite a bit on the program earlier on here on Viewpoint today. But what got me with that is you were, I thought, a little fearless. They're suspending lots of people off social media just because of the time of day that they don't like what you're doing or how you're doing or whatever. You were kind of fearless. Are you, when you say at Jack, that puts it right into their coffers there. He sees that right there. Are you concerned with that they'll throw you off Twitter at all by doing that or not really?
Not really, but you know what? I've gotten to do, and I don't know if you've seen these, I always say, and that's a fact, Jack.
I love it.
You know, no, I don't really care anymore. I've lost about 40,000 followers on Twitter after January. And the funny thing is that I'll tweet something, I'll get like 20,000 likes, and I will not get a single follower. So something is going on with Twitter. And Dinesh said the same thing that is happening to him. Mm-hmm. He's not getting any new followers at all. And so I think that they are definitely suppressing us. And but I do feel that, you know, I have a decent following, but I think that if Jack wants to if he wants to take me off of Twitter for saying something that's a fact, Jack, then so be it. You know, I think hopefully, and I'm praying about this, that we will get to the bottom of all of this cancellation that these social media platforms are doing and how horrible and corrupt and just corrupt they are and how they're in bed with one political.
Well, that's company. Another level of socialism is what that is. They're in cahoots. Yeah. They're in cahoots with them.
Absolutely.
But it sounds like that they do cancel people every day. You had another one. There was a tweet from Jimmy Kimmel. The walls are closing in on real Donald Trump. And this is when Trump had his Twitter feed. And you must have seen it because you tweeted something out more recently. And you said this. I love this one. You said, "You mean the witch hunt? ? Yes, you are right about that. You people won't stop." And I love the reference when you say "you people won't stop." It was sort of it demeaned him immediately just with those four simple words, meaning you put him in that box. I thought that was very, very clever that you did that, you know?
Yes.
So You had another one in the end of May. Democrats are so evil, and that's a fact. And that was about Biden's proposed budget lifts ban on federal funding of abortions. Meaning, again, this sort of a thing. It's amazing what you can say in just a few words on Twitter. And I got to tell you about that one on Kamala Harris got a lot of criticism where she just said, enjoy the long weekend. Right. Remember that one?
And
you said this, while we are all outraged at your insensitive tweet, it shouldn't come as a surprise that you and many Democrats don't value our heroes and the sacrifice of those that paid the ultimate price so you could live in a free country. Hashtag shame. That was pretty straightforward, wasn't it?
Yeah. Oh, it was. It was. But see, it's a bigger phenomenon than just her tweet. That is how she feels. And that is how many Democrats feel.
Yeah.
They don't value the sacrifice. And to be quite honest, they're trying to change what those heroes died for. They're trying to change the freedom of being able to say, things that are on your mind or give your opinion. You know, opinion is now regulated. Our opinions are regulated. And that happens in a society that is run by tyrants.
You the last one I'll leave with folks that you had on there is really kind of brings us all full circle. Look around at Joe Biden has only been president for 4 months. And so, in other words, look around and see the damage that is being done. And this is inside of 4 months. Kind of says plenty about the direction the country is headed into what you think. Debbie, thank you always for having a few laughs with me and for bringing a serious mode of socialism and the dangers here in America.
And there are so many. And thank you for having me on and for sounding that alarm.
Absolutely. It's been a very powerful program, my fellow Americans. Again, another great viewpoint in the books here. And we thank you always for being on the mission with us. Now, don't forget Monday to tune into A Voice of a Nation. You'll hear that full interview with Dr. Li Men, the Chinese virologist and whistleblower that you heard in the program earlier on. It's an amazing program. She's an amazing woman. Fearless would be the right word I'd use there. And again, another great program. Thank you for joining me here. It's time to get involved and get loud.